Hey, I'm CJ, a millennial. You may know me from the podcast Science with Millennials. Well, you'd be correct, but this time we're coming at you with something other than science. We're going to be utilizing Rachel's forensic science degree and my psych knowledge to bring you a podcast that will be both thrilling and chilling.
If you haven't guessed from the title, we're going to be talking about true crime. I absolutely love learning about different true crime cases and have a plethora of knowledge pent up in my brain about cases I've read about, listened to, and watched on TV. So we're going to be utilizing my forensic chemistry degree as well as CJ's psych knowledge. As a reminder, CJ doesn't know what the case is before recording the episodes, so it's a mystery for you and her. Let's open today's case file and see what's in store. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. All right. Hello. Welcome to True Crime with Millennials. Today we are doing a listener request episode. We're going to be talking about Jessica Ridgway, which is a Colorado case, so local for us.
Yeah. Kaylee is actually the one that requested it, so shout out to you. And if anyone else has any listener requests, feel free to reach out to us at truecrimewithmillennials@gmail.com or on our Instagram or anywhere else.
All right. So on October 5th, 2012, so this is a more recent case, in Westminster, Colorado, a girl named Jessica Ridgway was playing outside and, I believe, like, walking to school. She had made a snowball and was walking down the sidewalk when a man, well, I shouldn't say man, a 17-year-old boy named Austin Sigg, jumped out of his gold Jeep where he was watching her from and grabbed her as she walked by. Jessica screamed, but no one heard her screams. Just a heads up, a lot of the information of what we know of what happened after Jessica was abducted is from the killer, Austin Sigg, and he has told multiple versions of stories and so, you know, take everything with a little grain of salt. Jessica was known as a girl who loved to dance, hum, and just was very happy and, you know, a good kid. Sig said that he had never seen Jessica before, and that when he pulled her into the back seat and he bound her hands and feet with zip ties. Jessica then asked who he was and if he knew her mom. And he said that she kept asking questions, and he said that he lied to her to try to make her feel better and said it was going to be okay. As Sig was carrying her up to his room, which he lived with his parents because he was 17, so his parents were at work at this time, but he was carrying her up the stairs and she noticed that there were, like, cat litter boxes, and she asked if there were cats because she loved animals, and then asked what he was going to do to her. And he, again, just kept lying to her and telling her everything was going to be okay and that she was going to see her mom again. He said that he tried to make her comfortable by putting on cartoons and cutting her zip ties off. Then he said he stared at her for a while and then made her change out of her clothes, which were soaked in urine because she just got abducted and that shit's terrifying. And he stuffed the clothes into her backpack. He gave her one of his shirts and a pair of black shorts to wear from his drawer, or like his dressers, and then told her to turn away from him. Then he said he strangled her and dismembered her body, and he hid her remains in a pool shed behind his house. Like, imagine if you just came home from work one day and your child killed somebody in the house while you were gone. So, unfortunately, Jessica was already dead before her mom even knew she was missing. Later that day, her mom called 911 to report Jessica missing when she didn't come home from school that day. And for the next 17 days, police scoured neighborhoods and collected about 700 DNA samples. 2 days after her disappearance, her backpack was found with her clothes, like specifically the urine-soaked ones, and her glasses in it. And detectives said that when they saw the glasses, they knew that she was dead because it seemed like he had specifically put items in there to, like, she didn't just get lost, something bad happened to her.
Right.
They found the backpack in a superior neighborhood, so I think it was kind of, like, further away from, like, the neighborhood where Sigs lived, because he was trying to draw them away from where he lived. DNA on the backpack was then matched to a jogger. Yeah, a couple months before this incident, a jogger had been attacked in a park, and the attacker had tried to put, like, a rag with chloroform on it over her face and, like, abduct her, but she was able to fight him off and called the police. So the DNA found on her was the same as the DNA found on the backpack.
So this guy is just, like, out here trying to go after females?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. On October 10th, Sigs placed Jessica's torso in black garbage bags and left it alongside 82nd Street in Patridge Park open space in Arvada. At this point, the police were certain they were looking for an adult. They had no idea they were looking for a teenager. And on October 19th, a friend of Sigs's mother tipped off the police after she recognized a wooden cross that was found with Jessica's body. Sig then provided a DNA sample with no complaints, and he said he was home sleeping when Jessica was kidnapped. On October 22nd, media reports said that DNA from the jogger and Jessica were linked together, saying, like, that they matched. And then Sig told his classmates that he felt sick, and that night he ended up, like, sleeping in his mom's bed, like, for comfort, I guess. But, like, sorry, bro, don't feel bad for you. You just murdered a little girl.
Something that I don't understand, I mean, I guess I understand, but also, I don't know. Something that always has bothered me about this type of stuff is that, like, they will lie about not doing it, and then somehow, like, in their head turn around and be like, oh yeah, I definitely did it. And it's like, why didn't you just tell the truth in the first place? You're gonna get caught regardless.
Yeah, well, so for this one, the next morning he woke up and told his mom that he had something horrible to tell her. She immediately asked if it was about Jessica, and then she called the police. So now I'm gonna play you the 911 tape from her calling the police. All right, I want you to listen to the whole thing though, because I want your opinion on, like, what, like, because you get to hear both the mom and you get to hear from Austin in it. So let's pause the recording and then we'll just talk about it when you're done listening, because it's like 17 minutes long.
Hi guys, it's CJ from True Crime with Millennials. If you are wanting to support us more than just listening, be sure to give us all the stars that you can on any platform. That really helps spread the word about our podcast, as well as checking us out on social media. You can find us on Instagram at True Crime with Millennials. We're also on Facebook, which is True Crime with Millennials. You can also go on Anchor and tip us, which would be great. It helps support the podcast for the future, and we will be introducing merch soon. So be looking forward to that. And yeah, make sure to share our podcast with friends and family as well. And don't forget about Science with Millennials. We have that podcast as well, and that comes out every Wednesday. This podcast comes out every Friday. Thanks for listening.
All right, so what are your thoughts about the 911 call from his mom?
I took notes while I was listening to it. So, as Rachel said, I just listened to the 911 call from Austin Sig's mother, Mindy. As I was listening to it, I took notes, just kind of like a play-by-play to go over it.
I would just like to say first, think of how differently this situation would have gone down if he wasn't white.
That's exactly what I wrote at the end, too, of my notes.
Anyway.
So I wrote, he seems nervous, as does mom, which, of course, they're going to be nervous because of the situation and, like, especially mom, you know, dealing with this and then him requesting that she call the police. And I wanted to know, like, to you specifically, if how the questions that she was asking, if that's something that they normally are supposed to ask, or because she, like, he was saying that you know, I'm admitting that I killed this person. Why do you keep asking me all these questions?
So, yes, to me, there are definitely things that I don't really like about how this was handled by the 911 operator, but that is standard procedure. They're supposed to do anything they can to keep you on the line as long as possible till the cops get there and get as much information as possible in case he flees before the cops get there.
That makes sense then.
Yeah, so it's not abnormal that she's asking all this information and stuff. And also, she knows that this recording is going to be played in court. So getting him to admit any specific details is also good, because in case he decides that he wants to plead not guilty and say that, like, he was lying or something like that when he confessed, all that stuff would be important. But I definitely don't really like how, you know, they're clearly, well, the mom is clearly, like, super distressed, as I would be if I had a child and then they murdered somebody in my own home and the body is still in my home. And the fact that she just keeps, you know, pushing the mom for more answers and stuff kind of annoys me, but, like, I get why they're doing it.
It's to the point where she's, like, badgering her for answers. And like you said, yeah, like, I get it. But at the same time, like, she needs to just, like, give it a little bit of a rest in between instead of being super annoying and keep saying, I can't stand her voice. I'm a big voice person, so I'm so sorry to the 911 operator. Most of the things you did were right, but, like, I understand why she was so frustrated with all the questions you were asking, because you were just, like, repeatedly one after rapid-fire questions, and she's freaking out, not... And, like, are they trained for, like, dealing with... They have to be trained for dealing with, like, mental
distress, I mean, they're right? trained for dealing with a lot of situations, but I imagine this is probably still one of the weirder calls she's ever gotten. Not many people call 911 to report that they've murdered people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, they go through a lot of training, but also, like, I don't know if this is something that's in the textbook, you know?
Yeah.
But I honestly have no idea.
I also notated that his birthday was in January. Do you know if they said 1995?
I think so.
And when did this take place?
2012? He was 17. So whatever 2012 minus 17 is.
Yeah. He must have just turned 17.
So. Yeah, it's just...
And then I'm just going to go through my notes. He's asking why she's asking all these questions, and like we just talked about, there's certain questions they have to get answers to. He says he's giving himself up and then he's going to be cooperative, and he also admits to the park incident, which, again, when we were saying, or what you were saying earlier about him, like, saying he didn't do it, but gave up his DNA willingly, but is also admitting it on this 911 call, is kind of contradictory.
Right, yeah.
The mom wants to call the dad, which, again, one of the things I found wrong with this call is saying, oh, you want to call your husband, and not just saying, oh, you want to call his father.
Right, yeah.
That was...
But, I mean, that was 2012, so, you know.
Still.
I guess things were a little less, like...
I graduated in 2012. It wasn't that behind the times.
Old lady over here.
So then mom asks to stop asking, have her asking so many questions. She said she'll stop asking questions and then lays off for a second and continues to ask questions, which the little break really helped, I noticed, because mom was more like willing to answer questions after she kind of backed off a little bit.
Yeah.
The total call was 17 minutes and 43 seconds, and Austin was with his mom. Asked mom if he'd ever been to a counselor or a therapist, and she said years ago for porn, and mom thinks that it might have led to, and then she kind of trailed off and didn't answer the question. So what are your thoughts on that?
So I actually have a little bit more information on that. He developed an early fascination with pornography. By the age 12, he was watching child pornography, which I don't know if that's still weird, because he's also a child. It's like, is it weird for a child to watch child pornography? I don't know. Anyway.
I would say so, yeah. Especially if they're younger than him.
But yeah, so he was watching child pornography, and so they sent him to a faith-based counselor, which in my experience means absolutely no legitimate training or qualifications other than the fact that they've read the Bible. So he later said that that wasn't helpful, which I'm not shocked by because they didn't have any actual qualifications, most likely. But yeah, so that's kind of what that was. They sent him to a faith-based counselor for it, but it didn't help. By his mid-teens, he was watching extremely violent porn of, you know, children being, like, raped, killed, and dismembered. And I'm very glad to say that I don't know how to even find that. So, anyway. But yeah, did you have any other notes on it?
Oh, yeah. Then after that, mom is saying she can't breathe, so, like, we can figure that she's starting to have a panic attack. Again, 911 caller didn't handle this, or the person didn't handle this very well, saying, take deep breaths for me. No, you need to, like, ground them and talk about something else and, like, try and bring them back. And I feel like that was kind of hindering the information that she was getting because she kept trying to ask questions as the mom is having a panic attack. And I understand she needs to know the location of where they were in the house, so I thought that was good because they were talking about going downstairs for water and figuring out that's the main level because I think at the beginning you were saying that they were in their... or at the beginning they were saying that they were in their front room, but they were actually upstairs in the bedroom, so that is a little bit conflicting of what they were originally saying.
Yeah, well, so with the mom, one thing that had originally confused me about this is she sounds so fucking calm at the beginning, and I was like, this is weird. But I think she was just in shock, and yeah. You can kind of hear it hitting her, like, later on in the phone call where she's crying, and she's, like, you know, freaking out, having a panic attack. Like, sure. It's finally hitting her. And I feel like, because when I first started listening to the call, I was like, this mom sounds entirely too calm for her having had a son just tell her that he murdered somebody and that the body's in her house.
I think it's more so like she has to kick into mom mode and take care and protect him, even if it's just like, you know, obviously in this situation, all she can do to protect him is protect him from himself and do what he said of, like, turning him in. And then it's like, okay, that secondary emotion is I'm panicking, I'm freaking out, this is my kid, like, we're taking away the whole protection thing. And it's like, okay, now I'm going to lose my kid for the rest of my life because he did this. And, you know, focusing less on the fact that he killed someone and more on the fact that she's losing her kid. And then it's like, oh, my kid did this really messed up thing, you know, and now I have to deal with this family has been hurt because this little girl was lost and this little girl is now dead and, like, in my house, like you were saying, it's just like... all of those things compiling on top of each other, but, like, a layer being peeled back at a time as this call is, like, unfolding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
I did find interesting that he goes to Arapahoe Community College because I am currently taking a class there, and that he wants to be a mortician.
Oh, yeah. So that was another thing that people said about him is, oh, he had a weird fascination with, like, body decomposition and stuff. Apparently... his mom had to one of her friends prior to this that he was weirdly obsessed with body decomposition and that she helped him practice pretend tying someone up with zip ties. And I was like, okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. If anyone, I don't care if it's my child, my significant other, if anyone ever asks me to help them pretend to tie someone up with zip ties, I'm calling the police. Right? Or if not calling the police, I'm having a very serious conversation with them and being like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like not like being on board with it.
But all of Sig's teachers from elementary school said that he was kind and caring. So to me, it almost sounds like around the age of 12 or something, something drastic happened and like really made him go looking for violence.
Yeah, because of all the... interests that he had.
Oh, apparently he also made a comment to a friend about learning how to kill people and get away with it. And I mean, but see, I always hate this thing because, like, looking at somebody's life, you could find stuff in anybody's life that would make them look suspicious if you wanted them to. Like,
right.
My degree is in forensic chemistry with DNA, with a concentration in DNA analysis. I have always been really intrigued by true crime and probably a little too into stuff. And, like, I worked in a lab in college where we, like, dissected cadavers, basically. Like, if you looked into my background, you'd, and were suspecting me of killing someone, you'd definitely be like, hey, she's fucking weird. But I am not a killer, so.
The mortician thing, like, I kind of just set aside because
it's somebody's got to be morticians, okay?
Yeah. I actually have a friend that has decided to go into being a mortician because she wanted to work with forensic anthropology, but it's just not a thing right now. Like, that there's a big need for it, but we have a big need for morticians for obvious reasons.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. It always bothers me when they're like, well, he did this. He liked video games and porn. And I'm like, okay, so like 90% of my generation is killers. Okay, cool.
Aside from it being super inappropriate.
Yeah, obviously there's a line with when it comes to porn.
Yeah.
Like, what's acceptable?
Also, I notated that he had a younger sibling that was gone.
Yes. Yeah, I think his younger sibling was it like probably at school that day, I am assuming.
The mom's sister came and picked him up.
Oh, okay.
Do you know how old the sibling was?
I do not know.
Gotcha. And then I also notated that they had cats, because I found it interesting that the 911 responder asked if they had dogs.
Yeah, that's for safety purposes for the police officers.
Gotcha.
So they don't get, like, attacked. Cats tend to cause at least a little bit less of a threat, although I guess a cat could really fuck you up if it wanted to, but...
Right.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of the questions the 911 operator is asking are to protect the cops. So, like, where are you? What's he wearing? What kind... Is he calm? Like, are there weapons? You know, blah, blah, blah. But...
So then I wrote, you know, they opened the front door for the officers and they were told that they're not in uniform. They're in plain clothes. And I was wondering about that. Are they, like, actual police officers? Or are they just, like, appointed or...
No, so it's super normal, especially for a case like this. They probably sent the detectives on the case if they were available to go make the arrest, since they're the ones that know the facts of the case. And usually detectives just wear street clothes.
Okay.
They don't usually wear, like, uniforms. So that's super normal.
Towards the end of the call, she takes a call from her sister while on the 911 call and said, I don't know, you know, how to get back to the call, or I'll try to, or whatever, which I found interesting that the 911 responder was, like, trying to get her to stay on the line, which I understand, but then also the mom made a good argument of, like, my sister has my younger son, like, I can't not take this call, you know, but I also was like, why doesn't Austin have a cell phone that they could call?
I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess they are in a house, you know, where they don't have a landline, so that's kind of weird that he doesn't have a cell phone. I don't know.
Right. And it's 2012, so it's not like cell phones weren't all the rage.
It's not the dark ages.
Yeah. The other thing is when they were, like, basically on hold, and I heard them talking, like, the responder was talking to someone else, and they kept saying, oh, he promised he won't use the weapons he has in this house.
Imagine if this was not a white kid, they'd be like, get SWAT.
Like, I literally wrote WTF next to he promised. Like, what? That doesn't mean anything. Like, he still killed someone.
That, like, the whole call just made me angry because I was just imagining if this was a non-white person or, like, a minority group person. And I was like, they would have killed this motherfucker so fast.
Yeah, because I don't even know what he looks like. And then they notated, you know, the race and stuff at the end. And she was like, well, you know, I can't remember exactly what she asked, but I wrote an Austin white male with gray striped shirt. And, like, I was like, ah, so this is why they're not freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean, they're freaking out, like, obviously, but, like, they're not, like, you know, like you were saying, sending the SWAT in or anything.
And, yeah, they're not even at, like, normally they wouldn't even go into a house since he said there's weapons in there. Like, normal procedure would be for them to make him come out of the house with his hands up. Right, like, and they're just like, thinking, yeah, we'll just meet you at the door. It's fine. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Come on, Westminster, get it together.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't, well, I'm going to complain not that they're treating people with humanity, but that they're not treating everyone with humanity.
Exactly. If they were being, like hostile on the phone or, you know, I feel like them talking to him helped, but at the same time, it doesn't matter. You should treat everyone the same.
I don't know. I get it. that, like, she can't be hostile on the phone because she's trying to, like, keep him on the phone and get as much information as possible. But, like, they... If this had been, like, you know, a black mom calling and saying, hey, my kid, like, just confessed to killing someone, you know, they would have showed up with the fucking SWAT team, guns a-blazing. Like, are you kidding me?
That's, you know, it's stupid. And I hate it. At the end, you can really tell that she's panicking because she's hugging him and crying. And it's just getting, like, more and more emotional. And she says, I can't remember what they said at the end, but something about how she was getting, Austin was getting anxious and so was mom. So they were both kind of, like, building off of each other's emotions in that point.
Right.
Because it was, like, getting closer to them being there. So I just think it was, like, all of the actual feelings about the situation kicked in right at the end of the call. And I wish we could have heard the conversation that they had after the call, but...
Yeah. And, I mean, he did end up giving, like, a really long statement to officers. I think it was, like, 6 hours or something. I thought it was interesting for you to get to hear their voices and, like, emotion in their voice. And, like, interpret that a little bit. Because I know most of the time we're speculating and you're like, oh, well, you know, I didn't actually hear them. I didn't actually talk to them. You know, I don't know. And, like, obviously this isn't, like, a full analysis by any means. But it's just a little bit more information to go on for, like, state of mind, you know?
Well, he's, like, the same way, kind of deadpan at the beginning of what he's saying, and then, you know, keeps getting pressed for more information, and then is like, hey, I'm telling you that I killed someone, like, please stop badgering me for information. But even though they need the information, like, it's... So he obviously sounds like feeling guilt about it and stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, my question is, like, he makes a big deal of saying, like, look, I have proof that I killed her. Like, why? Why is he, like, so eager to prove that he killed this girl?
I don't know if eager is, like, the right...
trust me, the cops will do that.
Yeah, I don't know if eager is the right thing. I think he just wanted to be taken seriously. Because, yeah. Like, if you look at the record with the pornographic material he was looking at, that's, you know, hurting children. And then also, like... Yes, going to school to be a mortician is a good thing, but at the same time, if he's learning how to do those things, or, like, take care of bodies, like, decomposing and stuff like that, I mean, that's just kind of adding into it. And, like, I also wonder if he got into being a mortician because of his interest in hurting people.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I... Oh, one thing is that kind of surprised me is when they asked him about the job, he said that he had originally tried to kidnap her, but then she got away, she fought him off, so that's why he went and abducted a child next. And that kind of was surprising to me, because, like, he was, like, into child pornography, so I'm kind of surprised that he would even try to go for an adult.
You know, I thought about that too, and I was like, maybe he thought an adult was easier to, you know, get a hold of, or he was just looking to hurt anybody. It could really be anything.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's a lot of, like, speculation, and he's, you know, given multiple statements, so it's, like, you don't really know if you can trust his account of things, like, if he really was, you know, letting her watch cartoons and trying to make her feel better. But I don't know, this one's just a very... To me, it's like, why, how can somebody do something like this, but then have enough guilt to want to confess and, like, turn themselves in? Or, like, do you think he just is tired of feeling like he's going to get caught?
I think it's the guilt. And, like, it's like if someone plays a lot of violent video games and then they're like, oh, I'd like to try this out in real life, and they're, like, young and impressionable, or even older, you know, it doesn't matter. But they're like, oh, it's not that big of a deal because I saw it in a simulation where he sees, you know, violent acts being done against children, and he's like, oh, that's just a video thing and whatever, but now I want to act this out in real life. And I'm sure that... Did he say anything about assaulting her or anything like that?
No. As far as I know, she wasn't sexually assaulted. But I would just like to say that I've been playing video games, like, my whole life, and I've never thought about hurting anybody.
Outside of video games. Everybody. I'm just saying that some people take it a little too close to home.
It just always cracks me up when people are like, video games are the reason people murder. And I'm like, no, there's plenty of us out here that are doing fine. Thanks, though.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, as far as I know, she was not, like, sexually assaulted. He had her change in out of her, like, clothes that were urinated on, and then into a pair of, like, one of his t-shirts and some shorts or whatever. And then he had her turn away from him, and he strangled her.
What are your thoughts on him making her feel more comfortable in that way?
See, I don't even know if he did, but I think that it definitely shows, and I was gonna talk about a similar situation too. So the fact that he made her turn away from him before he strangled her is really interesting to me, because most people who kill by strangulation, it's personal or rage. They want to watch that person die. Like, they want to see the life leave their eyes. So the fact that he had her turn away from him so that he couldn't see her face, and also said he was trying to, like, you know, be nice to her, make her feel comfortable, makes me feel like maybe he was feeling that guilt and wasn't really, you know, sure what he had, like, what he was doing, or, like, kind of that. Not that he didn't know what he was doing was wrong, but, like, that he wasn't really sure about what he was doing. And part of me wonders if, you know, maybe this was something he had seen so much and was like, I want to do this. But then he abducted her and was like, no, I don't like this, but shit, I can't just let her go.
Right.
I really don't know. It definitely, that definitely sticks, both of those things, but especially the fact that he had her turn away from him sticks out to me a lot, because it tends to be like killers who have this like sexual motive. They want, like, part of the what makes it good for them is the killing. Whereas he seems more like he really was more interested in the kidnapping, or maybe thought he would be interested in the killing, but then actually wasn't, and was like, I just have to do this so I don't get in trouble.
Kind of just sounds like he was, like, acting out, and I hate to say this, but acting out like a fantasy of his.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really not sure. I just, it seems like he, it definitely to me seems like he wasn't, like, a psychopath. Because it, to me, it seems like he's clearly feeling emotions here. He is, you know, he is guilty. He's feeling guilt about killing this girl. And I don't know if maybe, you know, when, so, side story, my, when I was a kid, my mom made me go to those classes where they lock you in a trunk and make you escape to teach you what to do if you're kidnapped. It was super traumatizing. Anyway, but you're supposed to, like, like, tell them things about yourself. Like, make sure you are as human to them as possible. And I wonder if, since she was just a very, like, friendly kid, and he said he was asking him a lot of questions and she was, you know, talking to him a lot, I wonder if maybe she kind of succeeded in that, and then he was like, well, I don't really want to kill her, I don't want to rape her, but I can't just let her leave.
Yeah,
but he, oh yeah, he could have, I mean, he would have probably gone to jail, but he could have
also circle back to the trunk thing.
Yeah, what about it?
Why, or was this an actual thing, or was this some random stranger she found to do this, or?
Oh, it was, like, the fire department or something. Or, like, I don't remember. But, yeah, it was scary as shit.
Yeah, definitely would be.
Also, when you sent me that video of, like, how to protect yourself, I thought it was funny. Because I did Taekwondo for, like, I have almost a black belt.
Well, there you go. Nobody can, get you.
But yeah. Anyway, aside from my childhood trauma. But yeah, so one thing to me that's interesting to point out is that the police were on, like, the completely wrong trail. Like, if he hadn't confessed, they probably wouldn't have known it was him, because there's one thing I haven't mentioned yet. There was a mix-up at the DNA laboratory. So even though he got a DNA, he gave them his DNA, normally how they do it, which seems weird to me, but whatever, is they will give them, like, envelopes with each person who submitted a DNA sample's name on it, and if the envelope that they receive is empty, it means they weren't a match. And his came back empty at first. But since he had just confessed, they were like, wait a minute, something's weird here. And they went back and looked through the logs, and his hadn't even been tested yet. It was a mix-up. And so, if he hadn't confessed and his thing came back negative, they would have just been like, all right, like, we're looking for an adult.
That is ridiculous.
I don't know why they decided to do it like that. That seems really weird to me. But, yeah, I don't know. Super, super crazy. Because at first when I heard, oh, there was like a matchup and it originally, or mix up at the lab and originally it didn't match and then it did, I was like, oh, that sounds sketchy, like as in they're trying to frame him. But then when I looked into it, I was like, no, that's just a really weird way of doing shit.
Is it like old school or like what?
I have no idea.
That doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea. But yeah, I don't know. It's just super weird and it's crazy, because if he hadn't told his mom and turned himself in, he would probably still, this would be an unsolved case, probably.
What did they end up doing? They end up finding her body?
Yeah, so, well, he had gotten rid of her torso, but the rest of her was hidden in a crawl space, like he said, in the 911 call.
Why did he get rid of her torso?
You know, I don't know. He said he was getting rid of, like, the backpack and the torso, and they were further away from, like, his house to try to draw attention away. But who really knows, honestly?
Has he said anything since he's been in prison?
Not that I could find. And because he was 17 when he committed the crime, he's not eligible for the death penalty, but he will be in jail for the rest of his life, that's for sure.
I mean, even if he is on death row, I don't think he would die right away anyway, right?
Oh, I mean, people usually die on death row of old age before they actually get executed, so.
Right.
That's a whole nother rant that I don't think we're prepared to do today, but.
Do we have the death penalty in Colorado?
Currently? I don't know.
I just want to take a second again and thank Kaylee for suggesting that we cover this case, because even though I live in Colorado and, like, this happened very close to where we both live, I don't keep up with this kind of stuff. So, like,
well, it was also before you moved here.
Yeah, but
so in 2020, the governor of Colorado repealed the death penalty. So until March 23rd, 2020, we still had the death penalty here in Colorado. So there's currently, there's 24 states where you can get the death penalty right now. There's 23 states with no death penalty, and then there's 3 states with a governor-imposed moratorium, which means that they technically still have the death penalty, but they're not they're not doing the death penalty at all right now. For a while, there was a countrywide moratorium on the death penalty. And then we're like, fuck it, let's kill people again.
I just really don't believe in it, to be quite honest with you, because either way, they're just gonna rot in prison unless they killed, like, a million people, like a mass genocide or something, then I think they would be killed right away. But, like, how many people are actually killed right away on the death penalty?
Because you have to wait exactly till your full appeals process is finished. Maybe we'll have to do a full ranty, like, bonus episode all about the death penalty, because I have a lot of very strong feelings about it.
Yeah, we can do that, because I don't fully understand it, and I don't want to, like,
wait, is that Massachusetts is really, or not Massachusetts, fuck, Michigan is really weirdly shaped. I don't think I had ever seen what Michigan looks like until I'm looking at a map right now, and it's fucked up.
It's a mitten.
But what about the, like, weird shit that's not even attached?
What parts are
that's, like, attached
about
to Wisconsin?
Oh, that's the UP.
Oh.
It's the Upper Peninsula. There's two peninsulas. There's a Lower Peninsula and the Upper Peninsula.
Who drew the goddamn borders in our country. What the fuck? Like, at least Colorado's a goddamn rectangle.
And technically, like, the UP could be their own state up there. They want to be, but they're not.
Okay, so do you want to guess what year the death penalty was abolished in Michigan?
1997.
1846. They were like, we not good killing anybody out here.
I think that's why I know so little about it, is because we just don't have it.
Maryland was 2013 for the abolition of the death penalty.
Yeah, write that down, though, and we'll do an episode on the death penalty. Anyway, let's get back on.
Never. Anyway. yeah, so the reason... So this definitely is an interesting case, and I don't know, there's not a whole lot to, like, discuss other than why, because it's not, like, whether he did it or not, because he did, for sure. But, I mean, I guess if he was, like, an adult when he, committed this crime, and it was, like, a situation where, you know, he's, like, definitely admitting it, like, there's evidence that backs it up, I wouldn't be so, like, against the death penalty for it, but, like, the death penalty is not something you can, like, cherry pick and choose who you get to apply it to, so.
So, do you think that he actually did not know her and it was random, or?
I think that he didn't, like, he had probably never met her. Whether he was stalking her for a couple days prior to this, I don't know. But I don't think he, like, met her or anything. There's no evidence of that ever happening. He did say that he was just kind of, like, prowling, like driving through the streets looking for people to abduct. So one thing that was interesting or weird, I don't know, both, is that he had a girlfriend at the time, and his girlfriend said that he stayed with her one night a week, but his mom said that he was away from the house four nights a week, and nobody to this day, like, nobody knows where he was those other three nights of the week. Like, where the you gotta sleep somewhere, dude. So, that's just an interesting factoid, I guess.
Yeah, I wonder if he was, like, out stalking people then.
Maybe, yeah. Just, like, slept in his car or something, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that he, like, knew her, but he might have been, like, stalking her for a couple days or something. But it also, this also just goes to kind of prove how ineffective the strategies for avoiding being kidnapped are, because they literally had just been doing, like, a project at school or whatever, where it's like, you know, they had to write different types of sentences, and, like, her exclamatory one was like, stay away from strangers or something like that. And so she was aware, like, being careful of who was around her and, like, stuff like that, and it didn't help.
Right.
Which sucks. But
yeah, I'm really sad for that little girl's family.
But also, it makes me kind of mad, because we'll have to cover one of these cases soon, but there's a couple of cases about, well, there's so many more than a couple. There's so many cases of, you know, missing and murdered people of color and people of minority groups, like LGBT people, where the police just don't give a fuck. But then a white girl goes missing and they do 700 fucking DNA tests.
Yeah, because the Gabby Petito stuff is resurfacing again.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I mean, it's not that I'm saying she doesn't deserve that, but everyone deserves that. Like, not that I'm saying it's bad that the police did everything they could to find who killed her, but they, like, everyone deserves that. And that was the frustrating thing with the Gabby Petito case. Like, obviously I wanted her to be found and I wanted her to be okay and or for them to find out what happened. But at the same time as Gabby Petito was missing, there was another girl who was missing who was a minority group and literally got no attention. And I'm like, just because somebody's, like, white and pretty doesn't mean that they should have all the attention. And it's such bullshit. But yeah, this kind of thing, like, I'm glad that her case got so much attention, but this kind of case just really enforces the glaring impact, or the glaring differences in how minority groups are treated by the police. And by the general public and communities.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
It's just so frustrating. I think definitely coming up here soon, we're going to make a big effort to cover a lot of cases where the victims were people from minority groups, just because their stories are just as important to tell, but they're the ones that are told less.
For sure.
And if you haven't checked it out, there's a really good documentary on Netflix right now. Or maybe it's on, no, it's on Peacock. So I can't find the actual movie I was talking about right now, but it's on, like, if you look at documentaries on Peacock, you'll find it. But it's a really good documentary, but in the northern United States and Canada, there is a huge problem with missing and murdered Indigenous women and nothing being done about it.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna have to cover that case that was going on at the same time as the Gabby Petito case.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think, we probably won't ever cover the Gabby Petito case because it got enough attention.
Yeah, I have zero. I mean, we've talked about it a couple of times, but I definitely don't think it needs more attention on it.
Right. But yeah.
Not that it doesn't deserve attention. It's just like it's gotten so much attention.
Everybody knows the details of that case. You know, it doesn't need somebody to speak out and give the details of the case and raise awareness. So, you know, we'll just leave it at that.
Any hoodle.
But yeah, I think that's it for this case. It was a little more straightforward, unless you have anything else to say, CJ.
I do not.
So thank you guys for hanging out and listening to True Crime with Millennials. And we'll see you next week.
Until next time, stay classy.